Welcome to Wildlife Outdoors with your host, Russell and Jose. If you have a passion for conservation of the outdoors, or you're enjoying a calming hike in the mountains, an exhilarating kayak trip on the river, feeling a fish on the end of your line, cooking on an open flame in a primitive campsite, or stalking big game, just waiting for the perfect shot, you're in the right place. So put on your boots and polarized sunglasses and come along for the ride.
What's happening, y'all? Welcome back to Wildlife Outdoors. We got a short one here for you today. So we're going to just talk about some weekend shenanigans we had. We both got some stories from some adventures we had this past weekend. So what are you going to talk about, Jose?
So I'm going to talk about a little carp fishing adventure I went on this past weekend.
Nice. And I am going to talk about a short camping trip I did for Father's Day with my girlfriend and my kids. So pretty busy weekend, eventful weekend.
Yeah, man, I saw those photos and videos. Sounds like seemed like you guys had a pretty dang good time.
We did. We got extremely lucky because last week we had some severe hailstorms come through. Totaling cars, causing thousands of dollars of damage to people's houses. I got out kind of good. Both my work truck and my personal truck both got damaged. My personal truck has like fist sized dents all over it and a broken windshield, but the truck is not totaled. So I'm blessed in that, and my truck is still drivable. So I think sometime next week I'm supposed to have an adjuster come out and take a look at it and assess the damage and see if they're going to cover it and whatnot. So that happened, but I mean, I'm fortunate compared to some of those out there. I mean, we had some softball size hail come through here.
Wow, dude, that sucks, man. I'm sorry,
man. It happens, but I wasn't gonna let that affect our weekend.
That's freaking nuts, dude. Were there any tornadoes?
No, dude, it was all straight line winds and just thunderstorms, hailstorms.
Wow, dude, that's wild.
Yeah, dude, it was pretty nuts, but luckily we had some decent weather come through over the weekend. Friday it was a little choppy. They got some rains and they were expecting possible hail again. And we got a little bit, but nothing major, like nothing over pea size. Just some straight line winds and some rain. And then we decided to go camping Friday night into Saturday. And supposedly it was supposed to get bad again, but we went out and we went to a KOA here in Hot Springs. And if y'all haven't ever been to a KOA, if you have young ones, it is like perfect. They have like cabins, and I don't know about every KOA, but the one here, for instance, has cabins. So they have internet and TV and all that stuff. If you just want to introduce your little ones, we went the more primitive style. We got, you know, a tent site. So we just stayed out there. They do have electricity, which, you know, makes it definitely a lot easier for the little ones. They got a picnic table at every side, and they have a fire pit and all sorts of stuff. So we went there and we tent camped, set up the tent, went to the pool and did some swimming, and then did some s'mores, cooked some hot dogs over the fire. And it was pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't too hot. I think during the day it got up to like 86 or something. So it wasn't too hot at all. And then at night it cooled down to the 70s, low 70s, I think. And
nice.
I was just betting on it not raining because I took the top off the tent so we can get a little more breeze. And luckily we didn't get any rain.
Well, that's good. That would have been a damp for sure.
Oh, it would have. But I mean, it was a good time. The only thing that sucks is so the mattress that I have, the air mattress I have, is a self-inflating mattress. And so since we had power there, I just plugged it in and it's like a fancy air mattress. And so it airs itself up with a little pump that's built into it. And I thought I had a second mattress in my camping tote. And I didn't. And I was like, crap, because there was four of us. It was, you know, me, Ruth, and then Peyton, who's 13, and Adeline, who's 5. So all four of us on one bed wouldn't have been comfortable. So I was like, crap, I thought I had another one. So Ruth said that her parents had some. And so she went to go pick them up and she comes back and there's no pump. I had a pump, but the pump I had didn't fit the nozzle for hers. So I blew up this queen size mattress by mouth. And I mean, I had to keep taking breaks. I was getting lightheaded, but I aired it up. I got it up. At that point, we had already eaten hot dogs and the kids were doing s'mores. And So I was in there blowing it up, got it all blown up, and then we get ready for bed. Well, we played with the fire a little bit more. They got these little packages that have different metals and stuff in them. You put in the fire and it changes the color of the fire. And so there was some green, turquoise, blue, purple. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I'd never heard of them before, but the kids loved it. So
I've seen them. I just didn't know how that worked.
Yeah, apparently. Well, I'll tell you how we did it, and I'll tell you how it's supposed to be done. So Peyton, my oldest daughter, she doesn't always read everything. So we were obviously roasting hot dogs and making s'mores, so roasting marshmallows, and she read it, and it says, do not cook over, like, don't put this in the fire and cook over it. So she tells us that. So we're like, okay, cool. We'll do it after we roast our hot dogs and marshmallows. So we do that. We eat our s'mores, whatever else. And then she can't get the package open. And so she's like, so she asks Ruth, and Ruth helps her open it. We dump it in the fire, and she leaves the package laying on the table. And it lasts maybe, I don't know, a minute to 2 minutes. And then it goes away, and it's back to regular fire. And they got two packages, and they're like, oh, okay, well, we'll just get the other package to do it. And so same thing, she's having a hard time opening it. Ruth helps her get in the fire, and it lasts like 2 minutes. And Ruth was reading it. She's like, it says it should last 60 minutes. I'm like, well, these must have been duds. Well, then I grabbed the package and I read it. And on the front in big letters, it says, do not open package. And then on the back in big letters on the bottom, it says it twice. Do not open package. Do not open package. And I'm like, Peyton, you can read the small text that says do not cook over this, but you can't read the huge lettering on both sides of the package that say do not open package. And she's like, it's dark. I'm like, that makes no sense. They're big. They're bigger than the instructions. So I think they're supposed to work a lot better than what they did for us, because she just straight up dumped it on the fire and it lasted a couple minutes. But if you put the package whole in the fire, I'm sure it would last longer, but they loved it.
That's hilarious, dude. Peyton cracks me up.
Right. And my kids, I swear they're something else. But yeah, so we did that, and then we got ready to go to bed. And this is where I made the mistake. I didn't bring pillows or blankets. Nice. So I was like, and so the girls were going to sleep on their own bed, and then me and Ruth were going to sleep on our own, because I have a big 3-room 10-person tent. And so we have like the ice chest and all of our gear in the middle side, and then on the two quote unquote rooms on the side is where we were both going to stay in our respective areas. And so we had these huge beach towels, and I was like, yeah, we'll just cover up that. I had one sleeping bag that Ruth was using, and it was too hot. Like, I didn't need a blanket. It was too hot outside for me, and because I like it cold. And probably around, I don't know, maybe an hour into us trying to go to sleep, I just hear Peyton saying, it's too cold. She needs a blanket, this and that, da da da. And so all four of us ended up sleeping in one queen size bed, sharing one sleeping bag, man, as a blanket, all with no pillows. I was like, oh my God, I made the mistake on that one. So it was tough sleeping. And then, so we slept a little bit. We got up the next morning, went fishing, went and played putt-putt, and loaded up and headed out. But we got lucky that the storms didn't come through our area. They did come through Friday night through, I believe it was the north end of Hot Springs, if I'm not mistaken. But we didn't get any out there. So it was a pretty good trip. If y'all, if any of the listeners want to go camping, but aren't the most experienced outdoorsmen and, don't want to just like go out into the wilderness, KOA is a good way to kind of get into it for yourself or for getting little ones into it, because there's plenty of amenities and they're national. I mean, you can find them anywhere. And they're real accommodating. They have anything. I mean, this place had private restrooms with showers and toilets, sinks, everything all in one restroom. And they're all passcode. So like any Joe Schmo can't just come off the street and trash it. So they're all fairly clean. The ones we went to were really clean. Your own private shower and everything like that. They got laundry there, so you can do your laundry if you're staying, an extended stay. They got RV slips. They got tent camping. They got cabins. This one has a pool, has a little store that has all sorts of stuff that you can need. It has a playground, a dog park, putt-putt, has all sorts of stuff. So for any of y'all that want to get in the outdoors but aren't that experienced, it's a great place to start.
Nice. Sounds like a fun and interesting trip.
It was. I mean, a lot of mistakes were made, but it was pretty good. It was a good time.
Not mistakes, just lessons learned.
Right, right. We'll call them happy accidents like Bob Ross did.
Exactly.
So what about you? You went and did some carping, huh?
Yeah, man. There are definitely a lot of lessons learned on that trip. So I had to go back home for some personal stuff that was going on. I was not going with the intention of fishing, but I did have some fishing stuff with me just in the off chance that I'd go. But I was not really prepared for a carp fishing trip. So I ended up finding a free day where I didn't have to like do anything, so to speak. So I decided to go fishing somewhere, and there was this place I had found on Google Maps, like, I don't know, man, like a year ago, that I wanted to check out for carp, but I never went because from my hometown, it's like an hour's drive. And then from College Station, where I spend a lot of my time or most of my time now, it's like, I don't know, 3 hours or something like that. So it was just a long drive to make for like an exploratory mission, if you will, at least for me, to go like and do by myself and all that stuff. And, but I decided on a whim to go check it out and just see if I could find some carp, because I'm pretty sure I've touched on it in previous episodes, but like here lately, I've been like obsessed with carp. I've never caught one. I've hooked a few, but I've just got whooped every single time. And then I just don't know where to go to find carp. Like the waters that I fish, we rarely see them. If we do, it's like one or, you know, just here and there, but nothing like I've never gone out of my way to specifically target carp. Also because like I was mentioning before, I just don't know where to go where there's like where you can have multiple opportunities of at least just seeing them. It's just they just really aren't where I fish a lot of the times.
Right.
So I decided, getting back to my story, I decided to go check out this place. I drove over there by myself, went, and it's a park, right? And so I looked online, and there's a $5 entry fee, which isn't that big of a deal, no problem. But they're supposed to open at sunrise. So when I get there, the gates were closed, and it was like 30 minutes after sunrise. So I was like, crap, man, like, getting kind of a late start. But so this guy shows up, opens the gate. I guess he lives on the property. And so I go over to like the pay station. I'm about to fill out my little pay stub or whatever. And the guy's like, hey, like, it was me. And there's another, an older gentleman. I ended up seeing him on the river. We talked for a bit, and I'll get to that in a minute. But he was behind me. And so we're both getting ready to fill out our forms. And the guy who let us in, he was like, hey, like, I just want to say I'm sorry. This is my first time being late in like a year and a half or something like that. So don't worry about it, guys. And he kind of rips a little like receipt, if you will, that we're supposed to put on our dashboard. He gives it to us. He goes, y'all go in. Like, it's on me. We're like, oh man, like, you didn't have to do that, but cool. Like, we appreciate it. So we go down, and I drive down to that spot that I found like on Google Maps, and I walk down this trail and like immediately start seeing activity of fish, not carp, but just fish in general. So I'm there, and like I'm fishing this little run, and it's like this, there's some current going to this deeper pool. There's a bunch of rocks and stuff nearby. It looked pretty fishy. So I'm fishing it, and I throw in a little Lana bug, and I hook a, I can't remember, I think it was a red breast, like right off the bat. And then I just happen to look to my left, and I see this big tail stick up, and it was red and yellow, and I was like, dude, that's a freaking carp. So I get super excited. So I let the fish go, and I change my fly to a carp fly, and I make my way over there. And at first, like I go to the spot where I thought I saw it, and because I just got like a brief glimpse of it and didn't see anything. So then I start kind of walking and making my way further back up or further upstream. And there's some slack water, like there's a main river current, and then it kind of goes into some slack water, and there's a bunch of vegetation growing up. And I see a bunch of, like, I see fish coming up and like sucking stuff off the surface, like in and around the vegetation. I thought they were just like bluegill or some kind of panfish. And then there's a place where I can get like up on the bank a little bit. And there's a little trail following the river. So I kind of get on that, and I'm walking alongside the river, and I see carp, dude, like a bunch of carp. I mean, I have never seen so many carp in one area. And I'm sure a lot of you, you hardcore carp dudes who fish in the hill country have your spots where you do. This was new to me. This is my first time like going specifically for carp and then finding carp. So I was super stoked, dude. Like my heart was racing. I was shaking and stuff. Like I haven't even made a cast yet, but I was just ecstatic, man. So I sat there and I was watching these fish and man, dude, I quickly learned, at least in that spot, like I need to work on my accuracy because you're, at least for me, like there's a bunch of vegetation growing on the side of the bank. So you don't have a lot of room to like make longer casts if there's a carp out there. And so I was trying to stick to the shorter casts, but the carp are going in and around like this vegetation, like this aquatic vegetation, like snakes, man. So I just could not find a fish that I could cast at. I mean, I didn't even know how to fish something like that. And then I did finally kind of see a fish like break away from the vegetation and start working along the bank away from it, like this little mud flat. And I tried to cast at it, and I don't know if I spooked it or what, but I guess it just finally found or felt my presence, and it just took off. So I kind of went back up and down this little section where I was seeing these carp, trying to find fish that could cast at, and I made like that just that one just that one cast. I couldn't find a way to cast at these other fish. So I kind of just gave up. And also I could tell that they were kind of shutting down. I don't know if it was if that window where they were feeding just closed or if they could tell that I was around, but they were just, their behavior totally changed. So I decided to back off and give them some space and just continue walking downstream. So I go on walking downstream, and again, this was an impromptu trip, right? Mm-hmm. I only packed my Crocs. normally it's not a problem. Like I fished in Crocs before, but for this stretch of the, or this river in particular, it was not the best wading shoes.
Yeah.
And it kept like slipping like all over my foot, like because it's, you know, there's no like mechanism to really tighten them down or anything.
Yeah.
I put them in off-road mode, you know, but that's the best I could do. I'm on this rock and I step down, dude, and I freaking eat it, dude. Like I fell so hard. You ever seen like the Sonic video games back then? Like he gets hit, like the coins go everywhere.
Yeah.
Dude, if that was me, that was me, bro. That was me because I lost my phone, dude. Like I had it in my pocket and when I fell, everything just went everywhere. Like I didn't even notice this.
Really?
Dude, yeah, I hit the rock hard. I was just kind of laid there for a second. I was like, God dang, dude, it hurt, man. And so I get up and I continue walking downstream and I finally stop. And I was like, I need to check the time because I only had like a few hours to fish. So I was like, I put my hand in my pocket, no phone. I was like, what the heck? And I started checking all my pockets and there was no phone. I was like, geez, dude, what happened? It must have fell out when I freaking fell. So I had to walk back upstream, man. I'm so pissed at this point. I'm frustrated and I'm hurting and I'm walking back upstream and I'm just looking and there's some deeper pools and the water was kind of stained. So I mean, it was still fairly clear in parts, but it was kind of stained. So I was really worried that I wasn't going to be able to find my phone, dude. Mm-hmm. And then finally on that freaking rock where I ate it, I can see this rectangular thing kind of sitting just below the surface of the water. But sitting on top of that rock, I was like, oh, thank God, dude. So I go over there and I grab my phone. I had been submerged probably for like 15 minutes or something like that. Uh-huh. And but luckily, it was still in working condition. I was like, cool. So
nice.
I was just about to call it a day and go home, dude. I was not having it. So I did that. I took a little water break because it was freaking hot. And I was also pretty hot. Like I was just so angry. So I was like, I need to calm down, get my head back in the game, whatever. So I just chilled out. And then I continued going downstream. But again, I kept slipping and like almost falling. And so I was like, dude, screw this. So I got up on the bank a little bit. There's like a little trail I could follow. So I started doing that. And then But it was also nice because the bank was elevated from the river, so I could have a better field of view. And dude, I just started seeing carp freaking everywhere, man. And I saw these two working in this pool, and I decided to just like sit there and just watch them, see if they can, if they get a little closer. And they got a little bit closer. I tried to make a cast, and I don't know, like, if they just didn't see my fly or what, but they, or they just didn't care, but they did not, they just kind of batted an eye. They did not give it another look. And so I cast it in there like another two or three times. And then I guess they finally figured something was up and they took off. It's like, damn. So I blew that one. And, so I walked around to the other side and I ran into that other gentleman who came into the place behind me. Really cool dude and really nice guy. So we kind of talked a little bit. And he said that he's fished there before, had some pretty good luck before, but the fish are, even in his own experience, the fish were being a little finicky. Like there was one, he said he casted at, like he changed several flies, casted them all towards that fish, and the fish did not want anything to do with that, with any of the stuff he was throwing. So I guess maybe it was just a tough day because this guy knew what he was doing. Like, and I'll kind of get, I'll kind of touch on that a little bit later when I talk about what I learned. And, but yeah, he knew what he was doing. It wasn't his first rodeo. It was quite obvious, but yeah, so if he was having a tough time, it made me feel better that a novice, a first timer essentially was, you know, like it didn't make me feel as bad that I wasn't having any luck either.
Right.
So I continued going on and I found some more carp. And so I kind of just like try to slow it down. And these fish, like they were happy fish, man. Like they were feeding head down, tail up, like they were just going to town. So I just sat there and I just watched. And they were still kind of far out, further than what I felt like I could accurately cast to. So I just waited, hoping for a better opportunity. And dude, I must have watched these fish for like 30 minutes and nothing. The opportunity never came, never really got a shot off. And I guess they noticed me somehow, and again they took off. And so I left that hole, went for another one, went for the downstream, and I found some more spots, some really nice carp too, like really big ones. And again, I just never really got a shot into the other one. And so finally, after about 3 hours of this, it was getting hot. I think that day it was supposed to be like 104 or something. It was getting miserable. I was getting hungry and thirsty. I only bought one bottle of water. So I was like, I'm just going to call it a loss and just go home. I didn't get skunked. I did catch one bass and one panfish, but I zeroed out on the carp.
Damn.
Yeah, I know. But as I was driving back, I started thinking about the day. And I, even though I didn't catch carp, I feel like I learned a lot that will hopefully help me in the future trip, because I do want to go back. And so one of the first things I learned was clothing. So going back, I wore Crocs. Not ideal. I have wading boots and I have some wading socks. Mm-hmm. I would much rather have brought that with me. If knowing what I know now, if I'm going back to that place specifically to go fishing there for carp, I'm bringing those boots. One is just danger. I've quickly learned like it was just dangerous. Like I could easily crack my head in one of those rocks and I fell and I was by myself. So that would not have been a good thing.
Right.
So one, it was just dangerous. And dumb. So don't recommend that. So footwear, I'm going to bring the proper stuff next time. Clothing, because it was an impromptu trip, I only wore what I had. So I had these like camo swimming shorts, had those, and I had a long sleeve breathable fishing shirt, and it was gray, which isn't the worst color, I guess. You know, it's muted, but yeah. From what I understand, carp have excellent eyesight. Like I think they can see true color. I could be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, I think they see in true color. And they're pretty keen on like picking up movement and stuff like that. So a lot of the hardcore carp guys dress like in camo or like camo shirts, whatever. They recommend you to, just to help break up the silhouette a little bit.
I see.
And I do have some camo fishing shirts. I just didn't wear them that day because, again, it was just an impromptu thing. So I would definitely wear like a camo shirt or something like tan, something just to break up silhouette, something that's not obnoxious, you know, like a lot of the fishing shirts that you see out there, like really light blues or oranges. They look nice, don't get me wrong, but just not ideal for carp fishing, as far as I understand.
I see.
So that's that. And then also I wore shorts. So I also have some like quick, dry, breathable fishing pants. I would much rather have had those just because I did more walking on land than I thought I would. And my legs were getting pretty scratched up from the vegetation, getting bit by bugs. And then when I was watching those carp for 30 minutes or whatever it was, I was sitting down and I can, and it was a hot day, one of the hotter days so far this summer. And I could just feel that sun just baking my legs. It was not comfortable. So even though I had my arms covered up with those long sleeves, I didn't have my legs covered up. So that was kind of brutal. So clothing and footwear. Yeah, clothing and footwear. That's something I learned that I really need to pay attention to next time I go. So that's number one. Number two, I think I need to slow down a bit. So like I mentioned before, when I first found them, I was really excited. And I was just trying to move too fast. And I think, let me finish this and I'll kind of touch on something else I just remembered. But yeah, I was just moving too fast, I think. Like I was getting too excited. I think I was just moving around too much. And I don't think that helped me when it comes to actually fishing for these fish. If anything, there were times where like when I would move, when I would cast, I'd get stuck on some vegetation, and I'd have to go over there and like try and get my fly out and all that stuff. And the carp didn't really seem to care too much. I guess they're too busy feeding, but I guess those moments in between when they're like moving from one spot to the next to feed, I guess that's where they would actually like pay more attention and see me, because they would eventually just like move. Or maybe I was just moving too much and they could feel it in the water somehow. I really don't know, but I think I was just moving too much. And so I think for the next time, I really just need to slow it down, be a little bit more intentional about my movements, you know, like only cast if I can actually have a shot, you know, all that stuff. Just be more methodical. Just take it easy. So that's another thing I learned.
I see.
Yeah. Going back to the clothing thing, this is what I remembered. I had a gray hat, but it had like a bright red bill. So that probably didn't help either. I think it was like a red flag, literally. So I would probably wear a more muted hat. If I had to wear a hat, like a tan hat, or like if I can find a camo hat or something, if I really needed a hat, but something that's just not so bright and obvious.
I see.
Another thing going back to that, to the clothing thing.
So this was out in central Texas area, towards the hill country?
Yeah, somewhere out there. Yeah.
So that's all limestone out there, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So there's a bunch of stuff.
It's slick as heck. So definitely, I can't even imagine those Crocs trying to keep your foot in on limestone and Crocs.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. Don't recommend it. Not bringing my Crocs again when I go.
Right.
So footwear, clothing, and just taking your time when moving and casting. So the other thing I noticed, another lesson I learned is, and I think this applies to a lot of things in life, but in this particular instance, I found it to apply really well. Don't let good enough get in the way of perfection. So there was, when I found those two carp where I was like watching them for 30 minutes, there were instances where I had some shots that I felt were good enough. Like they were close enough that I felt like I can get a decent cast off and all that stuff. But I was waiting for the quote unquote perfect opportunity and it never came. Unfortunately, they saw me and left before I ever got a shot at, before I ever got a cast off at them. So it's hard to cast at a fish that's not there, you know? So I feel as though I wasted my opportunity there.
I see.
So I think, yeah, so I think in the future, like if there's a chance, right? Because the only way you're going to have a chance at catching those fish is by having a fly in the water.
Right.
If there's never a fly in the water, there's no way. So I think in the future, I think it's situational. I think there are instances where you have to wait for that perfect shot. Like there's a really, really narrow window of opportunity. Like maybe you're just surrounded by vegetation. You have one lane to cast into. I get that, but this was not that situation. So in this particular situation, like I should not let perfection get in the way of good enough.
Right.
When good enough can potentially do, you know, so I waited for 30 minutes for nothing. Never got a cast off at these fish, just totally blew it. But I got to watch them, which was really interesting. I feel like I learned a little bit just watching them, or just having this whole like experience.
So it wasn't a total loss.
No, not at all, man. And so going back to that guy that I saw, and so the reason I knew that this was not his first rodeo is because, one, he was dressed in camo. Two, he had camo pants and wading boots. Or not camo pants. He had like fishing pants and wading boots. Three, oh, another. Okay, I'll say this and I'll get into it. Line management. So I noticed that when this, I took a mental note because I found it interesting. When I was talking to him, he had his, I'm assuming the rod in his casting hand, and then he had the line kind of folded up in his stripping hand, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that because the line was not just in a tangled mess at his feet. Whereas with me, whenever I was casting at these fish, my line was at my feet. And every time I tried to cast, it would get caught up in some of the vegetation. It'd get knotted up on itself or whatever. Like the line management was something I didn't even think about. And maybe it's not so much of a thing whenever they're a little bit closer, but if you have to make a further cast and like there's vegetation and stuff near you or around you that could get tangled up in your line while you're trying to make that cast, or if you make that cast and you happen to hook up, these fish take off, that line gets wrapped around a branch or something, and it could potentially snap you off. So line management is another lesson that I learned. And I saw that this guy had a pretty good grasp of that concept. He had all his line that he needed in this one hand and the fly in his other, like ready to rock and roll and make that cast whenever it presented itself. So I noticed all this about that guy. And of course, in talking with him, I noticed that he mentioned that he fished here before with good success and some other places mm-hmm. around. And so I knew it wasn't his first rodeo, but just like seeing him and talking with him and just taking note of these things, I knew that it was like for sure it wasn't. And I took note for future reference for myself. So just some things I need to work on: taking it slower, line management, dressing properly, having the right footwear, and just don't let perfection get in the way of good enough. And right. I think this guy, just seeing him and all that stuff just kind of further exemplified that. So even though I was unsuccessful, I feel as though I learned a lot. So I'm looking forward to going back with the proper stuff this time and just trying again, man, and seeing if I can hopefully get lucky on my first cart.
That would be freaking awesome. One thing I can say about line management is I've never done it in that instance, fishing for carp with brush at my feet. But when I go fishing at the dams, when they're generating, trying to get out towards the middle and try to get to where the striper like to chase the rainbow trout, I was having a lot of issues casting distance because the water's going to my left, taking my fly line with me, and just the tension mm-hmm. of the rushing water, it's hard to get a decent cast. Without like 37 false casts to get it out there. So what I started doing is, when you roll up a extension cord, if you have it all laid out, how you kind of roll your fingers and try to lay it in a coil in your other hand.
Yeah.
So I basically try to do that with my stripping hand. So as I'm stripping, I'll kind of do a slight roll between my pointer and middle finger with my thumb, and it'll coil over. And then I keep, with every strip, I do that and try to, and it creates this kind of loose coil on my hand. And then, so that way, when I go back to cast, then I can just release my thumb loosely and it all uncoils from my hand. I haven't done it consistently in a while because I haven't needed to. Typically when I'm kayak fishing or creek fishing, like it's not that big of a deal. I can just let my line float. But, when I'm dealing with the rushing water and stuff like that, it definitely came in handy on trying to get a further cast in water that's, you know, flowing pretty fast. That's maybe something that you might try out there. I need to practice it again because I haven't done it in a while. I haven't fished down at the dams in a while, but yeah, it's difficult, but yep. I could definitely see how that could be beneficial when you have a lot of brush at your feet.
Oh, for sure. I do need to try that. I do need to practice better line measure just in general, because even at the pond here where I fish a lot at, I mean, it just kind of gets messy having all your fly line at your feet. I mean, you can step on it, get tangled in your foot or whatever. Like, I think just better line management in general would be beneficial for me. But in this particular instance, yeah, dude, like I really need to work on that.
What do you think about stripping baskets?
You know, I have a stripping basket, actually. I always forget to bring it. And it's kind of cumbersome because, like, and that's largely the reason. So I bought it because I had this idea of fishing the jetties one day, and I figured it'd be good for that. But I figured I could also use it around the ponds and stuff. But when I tried it on at home and everything, it just felt cumbersome because I have, like, a sling pack. I already have all this other stuff. Not the sling pack is in the way of it or whatever, but I already have a bunch of other stuff. Like, I just didn't want to bring or deal with an additional piece of equipment that I don't really need. I see. So I think that being said, like, if I ever do go to the jetties, I do think I will bring it in that instance. I do think it could be helpful there. I do think it'd be helpful carp fishing, but I just tend to shy away from it for whatever reason.
I see.
Maybe I need to play around with that. But yeah, the line management is a big thing, I think, for me in this particular situation. So I'm going to just practice that, practice on my accuracy and casting, because that was another big thing too. And get back after whenever I get the next opportunity, because I saw some really nice fish there, dude. Some really nice fish, and I just want to hook into one so bad, dude. And also, I didn't have the right gear with me because I didn't have the right gear with me. So I'm kind of glad I didn't hook into any fish. I mean, there were some smaller ones that I probably could have handled on a four-way. I just didn't want to risk it. So I brought the four-way because I really didn't think I was going to see any carp. I was going to just fish for bass and panfish or whatever. And then I ended up seeing carp. So yeah, in hindsight, I'm really glad that I did not hook into one. But yeah, so I need to finish my rod build I'm working on. That's supposed to be the carp stick. And once I do that, I think this would be a good first test for it. So we'll see how that goes.
That would be awesome. I can't wait to see it.
Ah, man, there's a few things I need to finish with it, but I'm hoping. So I'm going back to the field this week. So I'm hoping this weekend when I get back, I can finish it up. We'll see.
That would be awesome.
So by next week, that's my goal, by the end of next week, hopefully, to have it finished up.
So hopefully by the time the next episode airs, you'll be done with it.
I sure hope so. Yes.
nice. So I guess next we're gonna do a segment we haven't done in, I guess it's been like a month since we've done a conservation conversation, huh?
Something like that, yeah, at least.
Well, we're gonna bring it back, and we're gonna kind of roll off of some subjects that we talked about in episode 2 with Brian out of Florida, and also kind of continuing on the saltwater talk that we talked about last week. So Jose had found an article, I believe, from Louisiana talking about redfish management and some changes that are going to be coming up that they've proposed that we're hoping to get passed. So I believe it's talking about oversized reds. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily oversized. Well, I guess, yeah. So this article comes from the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. It's titled Louisiana Lawmakers Take First Step to Conserve Redfish. So this was published June 13th, 2023. Louisiana lawmakers recently passed Senate Concurrent Resolution number 46, which urges the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission to prohibit the harvest of any redfish over 27 inches in length in order to conserve the spawning stock of the species. So as of now, to my understanding, I actually have the Louisiana fishing regulations pulled up in front of me. The current regulations for redfish or red drum is that you can keep 5 per person per day, so long as no more than one over 27 inches in maximum length is in that bag. So the bag, so the size limit is a slot limit going from 16 to 27 inches.
I see.
So I'm guessing with that, with the resolution that they're prohibiting the harvest of any redfish. So you can no longer keep any fish over 27 inches, which I found to be pretty interesting. So we'll see how that goes. I think at the time of this particular episode, the current status is that it has been sent to the Secretary of State. So we'll see how that goes. What are your thoughts on that, Russell?
So I can see, I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's good and bad at the same time, because in a lot of ways, it's good because it's preserving the fish. I mean, there's going to be more of these larger redfish out there to go and keep better genetics and reproduce and have larger fish over time. But at the same time, I'm kind of wonder, because we briefly talked about bow fishing and how bow fishing regulations are different than regular fishing regulations. So I wonder if this regulation also applies to bow fishermen. Which, from the previous conversation we had, I don't think it does. So part of me is like, well, why are fishermen being more regulated, but bow fishermen are not? Is kind of my question.
So I think, at least in Texas, if you bow fish, you really just adhere to the like length limits and bag limits that are already set in place by your normal fishing regulations. So I don't think they're not different in that respect, but at least with bow fishing in Texas, you can't bow fish game fish.
In Louisiana, you can. I don't know about all game fish, but you can for redfish.
So I think they might be some, let me see fishing. I think they might just have you, if you do decide to bow fish Louisiana, adhere to your normal, I want it load. Your normal fishing regulations, I think.
Okay. If that's the case, sure. then I agree. Like, so obviously there's biologists out there that do studies, and I'm assuming that they have done their research, and that's why they're saying that they need to regulate that more and keep more larger specimens of the species out there, which is great. If I know that we talked previously about the bow fishing thing, and I know that bow fishermen are harvesting far more than fly fishermen, so that was just my question on that. But if it's across the board, then obviously there's a reason for it. I think it's good. But then I do have another question about, disease and stuff like that. Is there any way that that's going to negatively affect the population if there's less harvesting of older specimens? So I would need to see the statistics on it. But overall, I believe it's probably a good thing, and that's why they're making these decisions, because obviously I'm no biologist, nor do I have a degree. But those are just my thoughts that I would want to snowball and question somebody that has done their research just for my knowledge, because I'm curious like that.
Yeah. And again, so I've never fished in Louisiana. I'm not familiar with Louisiana regulations. I'm trying to find bow fishing regulations on their website, but I can't at the moment. So if I got it wrong, I apologize in advance. So I just urge you to check your regulations or your local wildlife and fisheries officers, game wardens, whatever you want to call them, because I don't know for sure. But yeah, I kind of agree like with you. I think there's some good and some bad. So at least here in Texas, we have a slot limit going from 20 to 28 inches. I believe you can only keep, I want to say, 3 per day per angler, I think. Let me just pull that up. Red drum, yeah, bag limit 3, 20 to 28 inches. So in addition to that, you have your redfish tag that comes with your saltwater license. And then I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you can buy one additional bonus red drum tag once you've used that one, for a fee of $3. So you can, I think, if I understand it correctly, you can get 2 oversized redfish per angler, per licensed angler per year. If I've butchered that, I apologize again. I urge you to do your own research. That's just my interpretation. So don't take my word for it. But my question is, like, so a lot of times these bigger fish will fight harder, fight longer, and will often be pretty stressed out. And a lot of anglers who are like inexperienced or don't really just care to take the time, they won't take the time to like resuscitate them a bit before releasing them. So my only concern with is if they catch one that's over the 28 inch limit, or sorry, at least I'm just using Texas as an example. If they catch one that's oversized and then they let it go and it dies, like if that happens in Louisiana, like what happens then? It's just going to go to waste. I think that's kind of crappy. You know, that does no one any good. So I think there has, while I think the idea in and of itself is a good one, I just think that there's some situations in which there's some situations that need to be considered. You know, like that one, for example, if like there's someone fishing, catches, I don't know, 40 something inch redfish, let it go. And then it just happens to die because it was just too stressed out or whatever. I mean, that's some meat that they could donate. Maybe that's what they could do. They could donate it. Like if there's like a donation station or something.
Yeah.
But I just don't know how you would handle that. You know, that'd be kind of crappy, just to let a fish go to waste like that, you know?
Yeah.
Even though they're not notorious or they're not really seen as like the best eating, still it's just a waste of resource, I think. So I think there's some good and some bad, maybe not bad per se. That's not really a bad thing. It's just some things that need to be considered.
Yeah.
And like how you can handle those kind of situations. So I think it's a good idea. Again, I just think that there's some nuance that needs to be looked at. Some things, some situations that could potentially happen, and how to deal with those that need to be considered. But I like it. I like the idea. I think it's interesting that Texas has. I wonder if there's something like that would ever be considered for Texas, because I know our redfish, well, our trout. Both trout and redfish were hammered pretty hard. I think trout more so than the redfish whenever you got that big freeze.
Yeah.
So I just wonder if there would be any consideration for some changes in regulation to help the population of our fishery or help our fishery. But it's, from what I understand, it seems to be doing pretty good. I don't know. But yeah, interesting. Interesting.
So you might know this. How often do they do sampling and stuff like that?
I do not know that. I have no idea.
I wonder if it's like a, because you know they do a census, human census every, what is it, 4 years or something. So I wonder how often they actually do sampling for, you know, coastal fish and stuff like that.
Man, I don't know. I wish I knew a fisheries biologist to talk to, or if anybody knows a fisheries biologist that we could talk to, let us know, because I think that'd be a really interesting conversation that could be had. But yeah, I have no idea how often they do it. I don't know how they do it. But I do know that they do some kind of population estimation. It's just, yeah, I just don't know exactly how or when it's done. I mean, you would have to, like, these numbers are just not arbitrary.
I see. So I did find some information on bow fishing. So bow fishing is legal in Louisiana for redfish, black drum, sheep's head, common carp, catfish, flounder, alligator gar, and some other fish. The ones that are off limits are stingrays, bass, ducks, dolphins, alligators, stuff like that. Redfish are restricted to 5 per person and must be at least 16 inches, although it does not state that they have a higher end to a slot. So it doesn't say anything about oversize. It doesn't say anything about having to be under 27 inches. But 5 per person of at least 16 inches long per day.
Interesting.
Yep. And then it says redfish of the highest caliber may be found in Louisiana wetlands. Get ready to fire your shot. Sheep's head and black drum are best caught with experienced and licensed Louisiana bow fishing charters, stuff like that. So
interesting. So yeah, man. So then that means, so kind of going back to the certain situations, like with refraction and everything, it's really hard to truly gauge the size of a fish while it's underwater. Exactly. And this was one of one of the issues that we had with bow fishing in that previous episode with Brian, is that it's hard to kind of measure that. So if someone who's inexperienced in bow fishing but decides to go and do it, shoots a redfish and it happens to be, you know, 28 or 29, and they shot it, then what then, you know, like, what are they going to do with it? And should they be fined for, you know, misjudging? I mean, it's difficult.
Right.
I don't know. It's just, it opens up more questions. So.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's an interesting quandary.
It is for sure. So, but I mean, yeah, I mean, if it's across the board, if they do state that 27 inch limit is across the board and applies to bow fishermen as well, I'd be a little bit more happy. But if bow fishing isn't affected by it and they're still able to keep doing what they're doing, I just feel like they're picking on the fishermen, the traditional and fly fishermen, you know, because it doesn't make sense to me. It should be across the board, in my opinion. But from everything that I'm finding, I'm not seeing anything about a higher length being, you know, prohibited for any reason. So, but to kind of spin off that, I mean, obviously it's different for bow fishing because, you know, you're essentially killing the fish to catch the fish. So if you're a regular fisherman and you catch a redfish over 27 inches in Louisiana, then, if you take pictures of the length of the girth and pictures of the spots and the coloring on it, you can actually get a replica made. So I know a lot of people were like, oh, I got this, you know, 48 inch redfish and I want to hang it on my wall, which I mean, is amazing. Don't get me wrong. But if there are regulations in place that don't allow you to harvest that fish, if you take enough pictures, you can get a replica made and it'll look just like it. So that's an idea out there. I know that's something where, the Share Lunker program for, what is it, bass over 13 or 15 pounds? Is it? Do you know what the weight limit is for a Share Lunker bass?
There's different tiers now, I think.
I see. Texas Share Lunker. So, if you catch a Share Lunker bass, they obviously want those good genetics to be out there reproducing. So they will actually, if you qualify, you'll actually get a replica of the fish and they'll release it back. So, I mean, similar concept to that. If you catch a trophy redfish, but you're not able to keep it due to regulation, get a replica made and you still get your trophy and the fish is still out there to live another day and reproduce.
Yeah. Yeah. So in Texas, the Texas Share Lunker program, you have three different tiers. You have the Lunker class, which is 8+, the Lunker elite class, which is 10+, and then you have your Lunker legend class, which is 13+.
I see.
I want to say, let me see, angler who will, okay. I want to say that if you get your Lunker legacy class, I want to say you get your own, you get a replica made for free or something like that.
Nice.
Let me see. I'm trying to, holy crap, dude. Dude, there's a lake in Texas. I don't want to say the name, but there's a lake in Texas. It has 15 entries for the Lunker class, 22 for the elite class, 4 for the legend class, and 15 for the legacy class.
I think I have a guess on what lake that is, but
yeah, we'll talk off air.
No spot burning,
yeah,
here.
That's no spot burning. But yeah, dude, it's that's freaking nuts, dude. I'm trying to find, like, let me see, register how to enter. Okay, so weigh, measure, snap, submit. Yeah, they used to tell you, maybe, I think they used to, I don't know if they still do that. I think they used to do that where you would, get a replica made. Prize sponsors, fish replica. So yeah, I mean, but why isn't it saying anything about it? Whack. But anyways, but yeah, so you could potentially get a replica made.
Yep. And so that's something that, you know, and then that doesn't go for, just redfish and bass. I mean, you can do that with any fish if you're not permitted to harvest it or retain it, then, you know, take enough pictures and get a replica made. That's what I plan on doing. Actually, me and Jose have joked about it because I used to catch a lot of small fish. I don't know how I managed to do it. I've caught, I think they're called, if I'm not mistaken, I'm probably going to butcher the name, but they're called like gambusia or something like that. It's a small minnow, very similar to like a top minnow. And I've caught them on a woolly bugger in the mouth before. Don't know how it happened, where the woolly bugger was about the same size as the fish. I've caught literally a 3/4 inch largemouth bass. I've caught an 1.5 inch smallmouth bass. I mean, I've caught all sorts of different, you know, creek chubs and just random tiny fish. I've caught so many of them. So, me and Jose have joked about catching them and getting replicas made of them and having them on a wall or on our desk. What was the one that we were recently talking about? Was it a tarpon? We were talking about the micro tarpon getting a desk ornament if I were to catch one replica.
Yeah. Dude, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I wonder what the people who actually made the replicas would think. Like, what the hell is wrong with these guys? Why do they want to get a replica of this?
I'm like, they must really suck at fishing to only be catching these things.
Dude, but it's so funny, man. Like, so you know, like whenever you go into like a old gas stations or something like out in the country, you see these like replicas of little tiny bass and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell? It's like, why? Wait, what's the point? It's like a 2-pound bass.
Right, right.
I see that all the time, like some of the older places. It's really, really interesting.
I've seen some where they have replicas made or even just regular mounts of smaller bass and smaller brim, but it's because they have a wall set up to where they have like a huge striper chasing them or something like that. And so I wonder if that's something where they had the striper and then after the fact, they're like, oh, let's add some other fish to make it look like the striper's eating them.
Dude, that'd be awesome. Man, there was a hotel, I forget where, it was somewhere in Port Aransas. I think it was Port Aransas. It was somewhere on the Texas coast. They had a replica of a rooster fish, a big rooster fish.
Really?
And I remember walking in and seeing that thing. I was like, holy crap, dude. I want to catch one of those. It was so beautiful, man.
I want to catch one of my
favorite fish, dude.
Go to Costa Rica or Mexico.
Trip. I think I've heard of people doing trips in Mexico, like on the beach though. Like they'll just kind of like walk on the beach and because sometimes they'll come up and feed in the surf and like they'll just go and chase them on the surf. That would be a lot of fun.
I don't remember who put the video out, but I've seen a couple videos on chasing rooster fish in Mexico and it looks extremely challenging. Like you'll literally see, oh, it was in the Fly Fish Film Tour, wasn't it? And last year, and they're talking about guys that would go year after year after year, and it takes up to 5 years to land a rooster fish on the beach or on the fly rod. I mean, running full speed where you're sitting there ducked down and then you just see the fish out and you got to haul butt to it and just cast to it. And that may be your only chance of your 5-day trip to even go for one.
Yeah, man. It's intense, dude. It sounds intense.
Yeah.
But it looks so friggin' fun. I just want to try it, man.
It does. I do too. But like if it were something to where I could, you know, hop in the car and drive a few hours to do, I would absolutely do it. But passports and crossing country lines and having to, you know, find areas to go and permits and licenses. And I mean, I just feel like it would be a lot to do just for potentially one cast at a fish over a 5-day period. I just feel like that's kind of out of the realm of possibility for me right now.
I know it's so much, and to maybe not even have a chance at casting.
That's, right, just, right.
But I guess it's also the allure, right? It's because it's just a challenge. I mean, also the fish itself, like super cool, really pretty fish. But yeah, like it's. I imagine just the intensity of that style of fishing, and then just the not knowing if you even have a shot. Like that's got to be part of the allure, I think. I mean, it's exciting, but dude, I'm getting pumped. I want to go fishing so bad.
Right. We need to. Dude, we got so many trips we got to do. Speaking of trips, the Fly Trap, so they're doing their 2-year anniversary on October 21st. I think I want to try to get down there. I want to try to get down there for that. And maybe, obviously, if I'm going to be going down there, I'm going to be doing some saltwater fishing. So I want to try to plan that. But there's...
I got a buddy who lives in like deep South Texas, and he invited us both to go out. And he said he'll take us bass fishing and do some saltwater fishing too. So if we just... And he said October would be a good time for saltwater fishing. So it just so happens.
October is good for redfish, isn't it?
That could be something we could do too. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, bro. Yep. So we could potentially, we could potentially plan this out. We could maybe do that, swing by, do that, and then go do some fishing, man.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I think we should make that happen. I'm going to put it on my calendar. I'm going to try to work towards it. But another thing that kind of sucks is that's the same day as Honey Hole's Real Recovery event that they're hosting at Faust Brewing Company in New Braunfels. So it's like, but I hate to say it, but I'd probably rather go to the saltwater and do some fishing. But yeah, there you go. For our listeners, yeah, I mean, there's two events going on, both in Texas. One's in New Braunfels. You can go to a brewery. Faust Brewing Company has some really good beer. They're having an event for Real Recovery, which, if you don't know what Real Recovery is, it is a nonprofit organization that offers free trips to get, they're basically retreats for men that are battling cancer, any form of cancer. And it's free to the patient. So they can go out there and just kind of release, learn some new stuff, have some fellow men to talk about. I mean, it's a great cause, nonprofit. So if there's anybody that wants to be a sponsor, anybody that wants to help out in any way, or just go to the event, drink some beer, meet some people, that's going to be October 21st in New Braunfels, Texas at Faust Brewing. You can reach out to Honey Hole, I'm sure, on their Instagram, and they can give you any information on it. I would assume so. I know they're gathering sponsors right now, and there's four tiers. I'm not sure what they are. I want to say it's like silver, bronze, silver, gold, and maybe platinum or something like that. But they have different tiers on if you're going to be a sponsor. So shout out to them. I mean, doing great things. And then on top of that, the same day, if you're further south or on the coast, the Fly Trap is having their 2-year anniversary for being open. And they're in Rockport. Is that where it is, Jose?
Yep.
Yep. Yep. So they're doing that. I've never been to the shop. I want to. Jose said he's been there, and he says it's a pretty chill place to hang out. So
yeah, man, I've been there a few times. The shop is awesome. I haven't been there recently, but to my understanding, they got a few more items in since I was there last. But I mean, they got some fly tying stuff. They got a selection of rods, reels. I mean, all kinds of stuff. Chris Fowler, who runs it, super cool dude. Really knowledgeable. I mean, just an awesome guy. So, and an awesome place. One of my favorite fly shops in the state. And if you're in the area or plan to be in the area, definitely worth checking out, I think.
Yep. And hopefully me and Jose will be there on October 21st and then go get on some fish after that. So
gonna try it.
Yep. That's the plan at least. So, but we said this is going to be a short podcast, but we're coming up on over an hour already. So I guess this would be a good time to kind of slow her down. But is there anything else that you want to talk about before we go ahead and shut her off?
Going back to the Real Recovery thing, if I'm not mistaken, there's a gentleman who comes to one of the fly fishing club meetings that we have. Well, there's a fly fishing organization here in town. And if I'm not mistaken, he spoke at one of the meetings. And from what I understand, it's just like a really powerful, really, really great organization. And it's something that I hope to be able to help out with, like volunteer with or something in the future. So if you guys want to check it out, I mean, I highly encourage you to check it out. I've never been. I would love to. And even Honey Hole, when those guys have talked about it in their some of their podcasts, like it's a really powerful thing for to have that kind of fellowship and things like that. So I think that if you can support it, or if you want to volunteer or something like that, definitely check that out. It's a great cause. But yeah, that's pretty much all I got.
All righty. Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to get some things together, get some more information. And I'm thinking about seeing if we can help out, maybe become a sponsor, help out in one way or the other. So I'm trying to get some things together right now, and hoping that we'll be able to actually help out and be a part of something bigger than us. So definitely, hopefully going to be helping out with that. And so we may have some news coming soon to share about it, but I would love to if I can find the means to do so. So
for sure.
But that'll be it. So like we always say, thank y'all for listening. We hope that y'all share us with all your friends, family, like our Instagrams, Facebooks. We're on Pandora now, so that's one of our new hosting sites that we're on. So if you're listening elsewhere and you prefer Pandora, we are actually on Pandora now. So we also have a link tree on all of our websites. So feel free to go to Linktree and you can find different ways to listen to us there or connect with our Facebooks, Instagram, stuff like that. So we thank y'all for sticking around to the end. And we thank y'all for listening.
Yep. Thank you. Peace.
This has been Wildlife Outdoors. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Facebook at Wildlife Outdoors and on Instagram at wild.life.outdoors. Let's go live life on the wild side.